The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
It's expected that Lisa Smith will be sent home to Ireland in the coming days, with some reports saying she'll land in Dublin as early as tomorrow. What happens to her when she gets back remains something of a mystery. One of those people who knew Lisa in her years before moving to Syria is Carol Duffy, who is Amira of the Dundalk Muslim community, where Lisa Smith once attended. Carol, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, how are you feeling knowing that Lisa Smith could be returning as early as tomorrow?
I suppose I'm not happy at all, and I'm very nervous for the community at large, really.
Now, before we explore the reasons why you might be nervous about it, just bring us back to how you first met Lisa.
Well, me and Lisa grew up in the same estate in Dundalk. She lived in one part of it and I lived in the other. So we would have kind of known each other growing up, or roughly, well, I'm a little bit older than her, but we would have known, our families knew each other. I wasn't really friendly with her. I didn't go out with her socially. It was just that I worked in the mosque, got a phone call one morning to tell me that there was an Irish lady in the mosque who was thinking of converting to Islam, and would I come over and speak to her? And because of the position that I have in the mosque, it's usually my job to go and welcome anyone who comes, even if it's just for questions, especially if they're Irish. And I went over and I was very surprised to see Lisa, and I know she was very surprised to see me.
And what had been your impression of Lisa? I mean, on the face of it, was she a likely convert?
Definitely not. No, she wouldn't have been. You kind of see with people when they start turning to religion, there's usually things in their life. Especially you see people when they turn to Christianity or turn to other religions, they have things in their life that are going on, and they find some sort of easement, they find some sort of comfort in it. In the case of Islam, because of how we live our lives and because of how we are, it's usually a certain type of a person. Either they have met someone who is Muslim and they want to get married, or it's something that they've found on their own, and it's a lifestyle that they're interested in. Obviously, because you know yourself that there's certain things that we don't do, and we don't drink, we don't date, that sort of thing. So it's quite a different lifestyle. So you tend to get a certain type of a person really interested in it. Now, a lot of times when people come over and they start asking questions and they realise what's involved in it, in regards to our prayers 5 times a day, our fasting, how we dress, how we live our lives socially, some people would say, well, the religion is fine, but I really don't want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So when Lisa came over, I was surprised. I was surprised to see her.
Now, did she know anything about the religion beforehand? Had she actually converted before she came to your mosque?
She hadn't converted. She said she was interested in it, but from talking to her, I know that she had been reading. The stuff that she had been reading, obviously, just to clear, we're Sunni Muslims. The stuff that she was reading was a little bit out there. It was very mixed up. She had very mixed up information about Islam. And she was, at that stage already, she was into politics. She was not so much into politics, but she was into at the political end of it. She was talking a lot about the political end of it.
Where do you think she got her information?
Lisa spends an awful lot of time online and always has done. And she knew people that weren't practicing Muslims but that came from countries that would have had issues in their country, civil wars, that kind of thing. So I suppose the conversations that she would have had with people would have been about those kind of things.
Now, did she then start to worship in your mosque?
She came to our mosque no more than 3 times, and truth be known, is because the ladies didn't take to her very well.
And why do you think that was?
She seems to have the same problem with another mosque that she went to. She's quite argumentative. She's quite, if she says something and she's got something in her head, she's very set in her ways. And you can't talk her out of it, and she can get very argumentative. So when she came to our mosque the first time, the women, of course, very welcoming, wanted to chat to her. Wanted to, find out, what happened, why is she interested, what's going on in her life. They were just general, things, but she came across as very, like a know-it-all. Even though these women were, a lot older than her, they came from Muslim families, they came from Muslim countries. she was very arrogant with them, and they just didn't take to her very well. So she came roughly about three times, and then that was it.
Now, at one stage, she lived with you, isn't that so?
She did. Yes, she did.
How was that?
Well, after she converted, she was living in her own apartment. She was working. And she, for whatever reason, she couldn't live there anymore. And she told me that she couldn't go back to her house and she'd nowhere to go. And I offered for her to come and live with me. I mean, at that stage, I had known her a couple of months. I know the area she's from. I knew her family. I didn't have an issue with it. So I just said, yeah, come on, you can come and stay with me. So she came and stayed with me. And everything was okay for the first little while. And then things started getting a little bit tense between us.
Now, she had some unusual attitudes towards the hijab and the niqab.
Yes, she did have. She, from the very, very start, she wanted to rush in and wear the hijab first and the long dress. Or what I wear is very, very different, obviously, from the hijab and the abaya, which is what she wanted to put on straight away. But my attitude, and a lot of Muslims' attitudes, is that that's, you know, that's something that comes with knowledge. It comes with being comfortable with your religion. It comes from being comfortable identifying as a Muslim. Sometimes to put that on straight away can add more stress to you because people perceive you very differently then. You know, so that can actually hinder you more than anything else. So I was trying to tell her, you know, as important as that is as an act of worship, it's not the first thing that you would do. But she wanted to do it. She was rushing to do it. She was pushing to do it. And she used to tell me all the time was, you know, I want to wear the niqab, which is the face veil that I wear. I want to wear that, I want to wear that. And I was saying to her, yeah, well, that's years. You know, that's something that, you know, there might be a girl out there who could put it on straight away. But people don't seem to realise what impact that will have on your life and what impact it has on you outside your own home. But she was, that was it, she wanted to wear it. But it wasn't, I don't think it was actually religious reasons. She thought it actually looked good, which I thought that was quite odd. She used to say, look, she thought it looked really nice. It looked really, like, looked really well, which the mind boggles because that's not why we wear it.
Yeah, she actually thought it might endow her with some extra sex appeal.
Well, no, she did think it was sexy. There's a lot of people out there who think the niqab would be sexy because you just see the eyes, you know, and it's stupid. It's a ludicrous thing. You know, it's nearly fetishizing the whole, you know, outfit, but there is people out there who think like that.
I'm speaking with Carol Duffy, who's Emir of the Dundalk Muslim Community Centre, where Lisa Smith once attended. Carol, how did you fall out with Lisa?
It was a number of things. We had a personal problem between the two of us, but it was mainly just attitude. It was just, you know, it started out, everything was okay, but she was very gung-ho, she wanted everything yesterday. She wanted to learn all the stuff, but it wasn't moving in the pace that she wanted to move in. And as Muslims, we follow certain scholars, people who are knowledgeable in the subject, we read their books. She started to reject all that. She said, no, I'm self-taught. You're not self-taught anything. You know, it comes from somewhere. No, I'm self-taught. I know what I'm doing. I know what I want to read. Which was constantly online. Things started getting really kind of bad for us just before she got married. I was trying to take it easy with her. I was trying to be patient with her. You know, talking to her about things that, you know, that might have been on the news, things that we read, how we pray, you know, not to be such in a rush, you know, plenty of time. Because there is some people who could study Islam for 6 months and decide it's not for them. You know, that's a possibility. It's just trying to get her to take it easy and relax, you know, but that wasn't happening. She was dead set. This is what she wanted.
Was there any hint of radicalization in her at that stage? I mean, did you hear any talk of Al-Qaeda or of ISIS at that point?
Well, at that stage, it was too early for ISIS. But Al-Qaeda and Taliban, we talked about this frequently, because at that stage, there was things on the news, Osama bin Laden on the news, Al-Qaeda bombings, shooting, killings. We talked about that because, unfortunately, that's something that Muslims have to deal with every day, is the talk of terrorism and, you know, people assuming that those type of lunatics represent the rest of us. So we did have conversations about it. At that stage, she would have been, you know, was very interested in the whole Palestinian issue, but not even having the knowledge that it wasn't the normal run-of-the-day Jews that were causing a conflict, not even being able to recognize the difference between the Zionists, the Jews. You know, it was very knowledge-based on basically Facebook. That was the kind of stuff. And you'd be trying to say to her, well, actually, that's not the case.
Now, she has been cast as, you know, something of a naive person out and about, you know, mm-hmm. someone who was in the army and then kind of lost her way and found herself in Syria in bad company and so on.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a mischaracterization of the kind of person that she is?
I have to say I'm at fault for that. I was one of the ones who thought that. But in hindsight now, and I was kind of on the fence a bit, and I suppose I was listening to what other people were saying, no, she went over there to do charity work. She went over for a holiday and got stuck and couldn't get out. And I was saying, well, give her the benefit of the doubt first, you know, because the person that I know, or the person I knew, was, and I'll tell you the truth, she was a coward, an absolute coward, like, when it came to confrontation. She'd started, but she certainly wouldn't finish it. So this, the idea that I had of the person didn't match, you know, the person that went over there. But then, as time went on and I started reading more of the articles and watching more of her interviews, I can honestly say that I was definitely mistaken, and she had us fooled, and she is no more naive than the rest of them. She's not naive. She's not naive. She knew exactly what she was doing.
Now, what happened to her after you and she fell out? I mean, she got married, it would appear, a number of times. I'm not sure how many times she got married in law, in the sense that these were legal marriages rather than religious marriages.
Mm-hmm. From the information that I have, she was married once legally, that's it. And she was married once legally to a Tunisian. She married a man who was an Algerian. She was married here. She married him for 3 months. He was a friend of the family, and she married him, and she stayed married to him for 3 months. And then after that, that was part of the reason a lot of us kind of fell out with her, because she rushed into a marriage that I asked her, me, myself, and my husband asked her not to rush into this, but she was having none of it. Now, a lot of us do have very, very quick marriages, myself included, but that's based on kind of the knowledge that we have Islamically and who sets us up and all that sort of, you know, there's lots of things implicated in that. But for her, no, I want to get married. Find me someone. And found her someone that would have matched her Islamically, knowledge-wise, temperament-wise. And I just said to her, just give it time, you know, just, you know, meet him, give it time. Nothing would do her. She wanted to get married. And then after 3 months, she said, oh, he's not religiously strong enough or knowledgeable for me. And she divorced him. She walked out in him after 3 months.
How would that have impacted on the individual himself? I mean, did he believe this was marriage for life? Because
yes,
often
he did. He did believe this was marriage for life, because as for us as Muslims, and this man is not, he's not an Irish man. He's from North Africa. This guy was waiting to get married. He was in his 30s. He was looking, actively looking for a good wife. He was looking for a wife. When he met her, they had loads of meetings. When he met her, she portrayed herself as something that she wasn't. And she wasn't serious, because after 3 months, even if you're just not marrying someone, even if you're dating them, what do you really know after 3 months?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? What do you really know about them? Of course, I mean, 10 years into marriage, you're still going to find stuff about your partner that you absolutely detest. Do you know what I mean? So what are you going to know after 3 months? It was just, she just instantly, no, he's not for me. And that was it.
Yeah, because often it's characterized in the Muslim world where men can divorce their wives by text, it would appear, in some jurisdictions. You know, it's characterized the men are just exploiting the women, but you say the reverse is also possible.
It's very, very true. The reverse is very, very true. It was basically, she went in there and demanded her talaq, and that's what she got. And she was having none of it. I want my divorce. You give me a divorce. And then he gave her the divorce. There's no reason. It's very, very rare you'll find a Muslim man trying to hold on to a woman that doesn't want to be with him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
and then making her way to Syria, you dismiss the idea now that she's simply on a holiday and then kind of got stuck there. Do you believe that, you know, she knowingly went out, understanding what was going on?
She did know what was going on, and she knew exactly what she was doing. When you look into what she had done to get there. I mean, after her marriage to that North African man, me and her had fallen out completely. And someone had called me, who was a friend of hers, who knew me as well, and had just said to me, listen, we're trying to talk to her and she's not listening. Can you have a word with her? And I had said, well, I fell out with her. So they were like, well, maybe it'll have more impact coming from you the fact that you're not speaking to her anymore, but the fact you've heard something, can you speak to her? I invited her to my home. I said to her, listen, I need to talk to you about something. I need to tell you what's been said about you, and this is serious. And she got really upset and basically told me then that she had gone to Turkey with a man who she had secretly married. That was an Iraqi man. And she had married him and went to Turkey on a honeymoon and divorced him there and came back. So women, but people in the community had just seen her going away to Turkey with somebody. They didn't know that she was married and people were talking about her. And this is unfortunate. This is a double standard. It happens everywhere. In our community, if you lose your reputation, that's it. So that was husband number two. She came back. I spoke to her. Me and her got into a fight in my house about it. And then she told me she was heading off to Tunisia to marry somebody else, but she had met somebody. Well, I said, right, well, congratulations, off you go. I wish you wouldn't, but she went anyway. She went to Tunisia. The reports that I was getting back from friends was, oh, she's over there, she's quite happy, everything is fine. She legally married the man over there, apparently. And then the next I hear of her, she's in Syria. And when I heard she was in Syria, I didn't believe it, because I said to my friends, there's no way she would go. How would she even get into Syria? How would you get into Syria? Because at that stage, it was a war zone. How would a white woman get into Syria from Ireland? So obviously going to Turkey and all, she would have made her plans and possibly was over there, went over there with somebody, because she wouldn't have got in on her own. So that makes me think that definitely this was planned, because she would have had to put things in motion in order for her to get there. How would she get across the border? How would she get in there?
I'm speaking with Carol Duffy, who's Emir of the Dundalk Muslim Community Centre, where Lisa Smith once attended. Carol, why are you so apprehensive about Lisa's return?
There's a couple of things, but the main one for me is I really, really don't like this idea of, and again, like I said, I'm guilty of this, she was radicalised. She was radical. Anyway, she was radical. And I think people calling her radicalised or trying to say other people radicalised her is taking the responsibility away from her. She knew what she was doing as a grown woman. She knew what she was getting into. And these things that she's saying about going to there, and I was a housewife and I was just doing my shopping and I was visiting friends. Well, people don't seem to realise is the friend she's talking about is Sally Jones, you know, Junaid Hussein. You know, the charity have come forward and said she was teaching girls. You don't go out to a country that's a war zone and say you were just being a housewife and you were doing your shopping and walking around. She has put those interviews out there. You know, she has made it very clear what she did. On one of the interviews on June the 18th, she actually turned around and said that she doesn't understand how it failed. How did we fail? We. Who's the we here? And what my fear is, if she comes back here, the connections that she had, how do we know she doesn't still have them? You know, how do we know when she comes back here? Because that ideology isn't going to leave her overnight. No matter what she says about her daughter, I want my daughter to have an education. You know, all of a sudden this country is good enough for her now, when it wasn't good enough for her, that's why she left. Who does she know? And who is she still in contact with? Because those contacts just don't go away. The ideology just doesn't go away. So my fear is that when she comes back here, to make an example, and it won't be just an example of her, it'll be an example of our whole community. What laws are they going to implement? Sarkozy did it, and what they do, they banned the niqab. On less than 1% of the Muslim population, it was the women that suffered for something that a man did. Now, if she comes back here, they could possibly make an example of her, and I think they should. But at what cost, and how is it going to affect us as our community? And as well as that, too, our reputations. We are in a very small town in Dundalk. We try to forge relationships with the community around us and with the guards. And we have a great rapport with the community guards. They're excellent at taking care of us. But we have worked really, really hard to get our community centre off the ground. We've been saving for 15, 16 years for it. We finally have it. How is that going to reflect us? On us?
Suppose she decides that she wants to pray with the women in your mosque. What then?
Yeah, this has been an issue. We've been having meetings with the ladies in the mosque about this. Basically, how it looks is, if she comes over to the mosque to pray, I would be of the opinion that we should chuck her out. That's the truth of it. Not even let her in the door. But talking and getting legal advice on it, if she's just coming to worship, we can't really stop her. But what we can stop her to do is not allow her to participate in anything that we have going on in classes, or because we do a lot of classes in the mosque, not allow her to come into the community centre and participate, because we don't want that ideology there. And all it takes is for one person to come in and ruin everything. And she would be the type. Because I don't think she's remorseful. I don't think she even cares what she's done. She's coasting on the fact that she has a child now and that she's an Irish citizen, and I don't think she cares. The fact that all this stuff has come out, and I'm absolutely sure more is going to come out about her. I bet that the guards don't know more about her already. I don't think this is something in isolation. I think this is something that we're going to see more of. And I think because of the people that she was friendly with, that this is something that we should be really, really nervous about. She expressed in one interview how annoyed she was where she was captured and put in the camp, and they told her they were deporting her and they wouldn't. And she was basically saying that how angry she was that she was lied to. You know, like, if she was stuck over there for such a long time, how do we know she's not going to bring that resentment back to Ireland and do something? I know this is all, you know, ifs, buts and maybes, but these are something that we should be looking out for. No one took Caleb Kelly seriously. People just accused him of being a nut job. No one took him seriously. In fact, in some interviews, they just made a joke of him like he was some kind of clown. Look what he did. You know, and this is the thing we need to be worried about. We need to be seriously worried about this. She should not be allowed to roam the streets and go back and live a normal life. She rejected this life. She rejected this country for something that she said was Islamic. Me and my husband and all my friends are practicing Muslims, and Ireland is the best place to be as a practicing Muslim, because you get no one bothering you. The people of Dundalk, you know, they see you, as long as you're happy and you're leaving everyone else alone, they don't care. There is a few, of course, you get a few in every community that's, you know, a little bit extreme and a little bit aggressive. But here is a great place. There was no reason for her, as she says, to go and live an Islamic life somewhere else. There's nothing Islamic about them people. Nothing Islamic about it, how they live. I think we need to be very, very careful.
Carol Duffy, Emira of the Dundalk Muslim community, thank you very much for talking to us on the programme.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.